Listen to Tom Woodward, who's visiting us via Skype here in DS106, talk to us about video. And it is going to be a discussion. Tom Woodward does not kind of sit and preach like I do. He actually has something to talk about with people. That's something unique about him. Tom and I have actually done a series of projects together. Tom Woodward may be my favorite collaborator in all things because he's a nutball. But also, we've done a series of videos together, the EdTech Survivalists, and we've also worked together at the University of Richmond as an educational technologist. I think Tom Woodward may be one of, if not the most creative person, people I know. And many of you know Tom Woodward because he did that Stranger Photography series on Bionic Teaching, where he went about taking pictures of complete strangers, one of which was Sarah Kuntz, so in this classroom right now. So Tom is actually no stranger to the work you're doing. He's been following DS106. He's been integral in helping me think through DS106. The submitted assignment idea really came out of a comment of his on Baba Tuesdays. He's really one of the architects of this class, and in many ways a co-teacher of it, in my mind. So without much more ado, let me introduce to you the great Tom Woodward. Tom, take it away.
All right. So that is quite an intro. You do a good job with that, Jeff. Thank you.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I think I've been oversold, so I'll do my best to live up to the hype. I think I want to set myself up to I'm not any sort of video expert, right? I'm just a guy who happens to be interested in it, and at one point my job did involve making a fair amount of video, but that's no longer the case. So I know that Jim and Martha and I think Andy have all gone over with you, like the, codecs and compression and all sorts of stuff like that. So what I'm hoping to do tonight is kind of wander around in what video is. I think it's kind of a fun and interesting place right now. So this webpage right here will end up being our guide. I also have Twitter open, so if you have comments or questions, throw them in the DS106 tag, and I should see them, and I'll try to work them in. Yeah. If you'd rather just shout them out in class, I'd love that too. So, well, I'm just going to give a brief overview, then we're going to try and watch at least some snippets of video, and, kind of talk about what makes them good, what makes them bad, what makes them, useful. All right, I think one of the kind of the fun things to me is looking at the stats around video, like YouTube. So this is a little bit old. March 3rd, 2011, so not that bad. But it's just a list of the top 10 videos on YouTube by view. So you have the typical things you'd expect, the beautiful Justin Bieber with 476 million views, then Lady Gaga half naked, and Shakira, and whatever, and Eminem. But then number five is just, it's Charlie Bit My Finger, with 286 million views. It's just crazy to me that in the midst of all these kind of high money produced things, you have stuff like that, an Evolution of the Dance. And if you dropped another 10, you get more and more just kind of like stuff that people made. I mean, the Evolution of the Dance, the quality is terrible. Charlie Bit My Finger, I think it was probably filmed with like a phone or something. And it's up there competing against things that were filmed on, million-dollar cameras with the full might of the recording industry behind them and every possible effort made to market them. And the people that are hanging with them are just like some kid getting bit by a baby who has an act. To me, that's like the most awesome thing in the world. And it's out there, it's doable, it's possible. I mean, an old stat is 24 hours of video is now uploaded to YouTube like every 60 seconds. And that's like March 2010. So they're saying that's 24 minutes of video up every second you're looking at a YouTube video. And that just blows my mind how easy and how just amazingly popular this has become. And that's just YouTube. It doesn't count like Vimeo or some of the other sites. There's just tons and tons of ways to do this. I think what can be intimidating about video is that it can be really heavy. you know, it's not like photography where you take a picture and then maybe tweak it some in Photoshop. You can do some of that stuff, but generally, once you've taken the photo, if you've kind of thought it through fairly well, you're done. A lot of times with video, that's not necessarily the case. Not saying you can't do it that way, but a lot of times video is heavier in terms of work on the back end, adding soundtracks, cutting, splicing, you know, redubbing, doing all this other stuff. But if you look at this top list, you know, once again, no editing done. You know, this is just straight up, both of these are just straight shots. And the quality is not about the special effects, it's about the content that's been captured. And that's, you know, something really important to remember. We're going to kind of look at that as a theme as we go across some of these things. Now, I don't know how much y'all remember about Darcy's talk, but I do remember him saying that, you know, video was more like a shotgun approach, and you didn't have to be as precise as you do in photography. And I thought it would be kind of fun to, you know, bring that comment back up, because I think it's both true and false. So if you're sloppy and you didn't take that shotgun approach, I'm going to get that, you know, perfect section of perfect moments. So photography, you're just getting a slice of time. It really is about, you just have to have perfection for a very, very small fraction of a second. With video, if you're doing it right, you have to have perfection over a longer period of time. Now, you may film for an hour and only use 2 minutes of it, but to me, knowing how and when to cut that is as important as knowing when to press the shutter, you know, on the camera. So it's just kind of interesting. If you think about that, video can be as difficult as you make it or as easy, just like photography. But in the end, just like I think Darcy said time and time again, it's about creating and capturing what you want and what's entertaining and useful to you. And I think both of them just take an amazing amount of skill, and it's the kind of thing you could practice on for forever and never truly master. So let me get out of this. What I did here is kind of line up 5 or 6 examples, which I'm going to play a little brief clips of, and hopefully it'll stream through all right. And I just, as you watch these, I'd like you to think, is a really hard thing to define, and hopefully I'll prove that here. So here's number one. But a shot without really a camera being involved, right? You're capturing the screen. If she didn't show up, there'd be no camera at all, and it's still video. So to me, that's kind of a weird idea. And then here's kind of a different setup for video. Unfortunately, Vimeo doesn't load in the background quite the way other stuff does.
Let me load it here locally.
It doesn't need that much more anyway. I mean, so between those two things, you see what's going on here. This is just time-lapse photography set in a row, just kind of like you would a flipbook or something like that. It just happens to be a digital version of a flipbook. So between these two things, which one is more like your idea of video?
the first one or the brackish water. We didn't see any of the brackish water, though.
Oh, okay.
So let me get that up. Hold on.
It's harder.
Yep. Hold on. Looking up brackish water. It almost came up, but then I went off and I searched for it. So give me 1 second.
Do you have the URL for that main page?
Yep, I got it. I got it right here. I'm going to play it now. So give us a second. We're going to look at it, and then you tell. And then...
Right.
Okay, ready? Yeah, we're looking now. Okay, we saw it. We saw part of this.
So which one of those two videos do you think is more like your traditional idea of video and kind of why?
Okay, which one? Screen capture. The second one. Sarah, speak up. I'll repeat your question. Your question.
The brackish water one, because we've seen that kind of things before in movies, whereas the screen capture is really different.
So the brackish water one, because we've seen that thing. This is Sarah Koontz, because we've seen it before in movies. Not so much with the screen capture.
Okay. Anyone have different ideas or takes on it?
Who else? Nora. I'm going to speak for Nora. I'm going to repeat Nora, not speak for her.
I think they're both equally video-like, because even though screen capture is kind of a new technology, it's very similar to how claymation works.
Yeah.
And so we've seen examples, as Sarah said, we've seen examples of time-lapse in movies, but we've also, if you've ever watched Wallace and Gromit, you've seen basically what the first video is doing, but just in a different format. So they're both videos. It's kind of a silly question.
Good. Did you catch that?
Yep.
Okay, good. Who else? Anyone else? Okay. So, yeah. Claymation.
So you're saying, it's interesting because, you know, some people would claim that screen captures are not videos, you know, because there's no camera kind of involved. Like, if you cut out the fact that she shows up on screen, you know, there's no camera involved there. And traditionally, some sort of way external to, you know, the computer had to be involved in order to make video, at least for a long time. And so it's just interesting to see that doesn't have to be the case any longer. You still be able to see my screen, Jim?
Yeah, absolutely. So the absence of the camera eye altogether.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting concept. You know, it's more along the lines of animation in certain ways.
Yeah.
You know, where you would be, and you have your medium that you're creating video with, but there's no external camera to capture it.
Yeah, it's almost like the surface of the computer, and we have another question here, but the surface of the computer becomes the actual medium itself for even video.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is David.
It reminds me of the extra that comes with Avatar, the making of Avatar. They show like the camera, it's not really even a camera, that they designed for filming like the CGI stuff.
Yeah.
It's basically just like they're in a gigantic warehouse and there's like 1,000, they're kind of like lenses, not really camera lenses, that are just picking up what they're wearing on their bodies. And then James Cameron has this screen that doesn't have a lens on it, he just aims at something.
Uh-huh.
And depending on where it is in the room, it'll show him the CGI version of what he's looking at.
That's
so
awesome.
It's not really, there's no film, he's not really, like,
yeah.
It's not really filmmaking per se, but like, It's the same idea.
And it's all digital
yeah.
media.
Well, yeah. It's the thing that, like, it's just humans as giant controllers. You know, they're just giant remotes for something that exists totally in a, you know, in cyberspace. You know, that's just a weird, weird thought to me. You know, the people are the least important kind of part of that when the movie ends up getting made.
Yeah, and the ultimate idea that they're, you know, you'll be able to pretty easily replace actors with avatars, right? I mean, that's what's interesting about Avatar as a kind of conception.
Well, and I know they played around with this in when Blu-ray and stuff like that first came out, is that, and I think they'll be able to do it fairly soon, is the idea of, like, mapping yourself onto movie characters and having, like, you upload your picture, and then instead of James Bond's head, it's Jim Groom's head throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, kind of like DS-106.
Yeah, right. And I know you would like to be the star of a movie.
Yes, I would. Every movie.
Well, we've got, coming up next is another kind of stop motion thing, but I think it's interesting to compare it to the other one. So the other was more of a traditional stop motion, you know, time lapse, where you camera was steady and things move kind of around the camera. This flight patterns one, we'll see how it comes and see
okay.
if Jim
actually,
playing.
You know what? I have it up. I'll bring it up here.
Okay. Yeah, give it a shot. Just play, you know, 15, 20 seconds.
You got it. That's crazy. All right. Awesome. That was crazy. Okay, we still have 20 seconds of it.
Okay, so y'all tell me, you're in digital storytelling. Do these things tell a story? I mean, it's cool and it's interesting, but, like, does it matter? Is there a story behind it? Is it more than just kind of visual, I don't know, confetti?
Akka, this is Akka responding to your question.
It really reminds me of video art, per se, and then a lot of video art has a lot of layering behind each of the different films or different videos that we look at, and I see it more towards the video art side instead of a story.
Did you catch that?
Yeah.
Good. Wow. Yeah. Who else? Is that a story? Erin.
If it had a context, it'd be more of a story. Say, we saw that very same thing right before September 11th, maybe. It would tell a different aspect of a narrative, but it's not quite a story as it is.
Yeah, I like that, putting it in juxtaposition, like September 11th and what happens to the flight patterns as a result. Yeah, who else? I like this question. I like the idea that it's video art, because the context is missing. So you fill in the context, and it becomes your own. All right.
All right. So this one's interesting. Those are bugs, by the way, not planes, right?
I think we saw a different video.
Oh, yeah. We might have seen... We saw a plane video.
Hold
on. I really like the plane video.
Yeah, that's a good one. I know which one you're talking about.
Okay, hold on. Let's get the other one, too. Ready?
No, that's still it?
Flight patterns?
Maybe I botched it.
Okay, what am I looking at?
It should be like the one that's under lamppost, right?
Okay, so Vimeo, flight...
Yeah, it says flight patterns. It's got a telephone pole.
Okay. And what else is in the title? Flight patterns and what else?
Charlie McCarthy.
Charlie. Huh. Charlie. Good, yeah, we're going to find it right now. Yeah, we got it. Okay, let's watch it right now. We were watching the other one, sorry. That's
well,
my
that's
bad.
That's interesting.
Okay, first 20 minutes of this one. Yeah. Okay. Good.
So, I mean, that's kind of an interesting one to compare to the flight pattern, one of the planes. I don't know, is this more of a story, less of a story, same thing? What do y'all think?
More of a story, why?
Because I had that little flash of the street light, or
the street sign. The street sign. I was thinking the same thing. The flash of the street sign, the kind of focus of the telephone pole versus what was happening behind it. And I didn't know if that was, I thought you said not bugs, but bullets. I was thinking, is that bullets? Like, how could that be bullets, right? That's insane. Where is this, right? Hey, Rue?
Yeah.
So I was, I mean, at some point, who else? Yeah. I mean, I think it's more of a story in some ways than the other one we saw, the flight patterns one. And I like the flight patterns one as an abstract art, but also as thinking of an abstract art, like Aaron said, without the context of, say, this is the flight patterns after X date or because of X event. Whereas this is kind of a story in my mind, especially like we're in spring here in Virginia, and you know in about a month or two, my backyard becomes full of insane bugs. And they come out of the woodworks, and they're big, and they're sick, and they're all over the place. So this is a narrative that I can relate to because of my own personal experience with bugs in Virginia. Does that make any sense? And I'm going to make a video about them now.
I think it is one of those interesting ones that then makes me reassess what I'm looking at. And, you know, when now it's instead of coming home and seeing like moths just like banging their heads into things, you know, you kind of think like, what would that pattern look like? It changes the way you perceive kind of a section of your life, which I think is kind of interesting.
Well, what it might be if you were a bug to live your life like entirely drunk, right? Because you look at their patterns, and if it is about the patterns, they're all, it seems like they're like completely off, right?
Yeah, it opens up a lot of weird kind of decision, you know, questions, I guess. And to me, it's an interesting juxtaposition with the other time lapse, which was so still and kind of solid. And this one, you know, it's just a very different take on the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, same technique, but a very different style.
Yeah, and rather than like the placid look at nature, which is, you know, the kind of cliche way to think about it, this is more like the chaotic part behind it. Kind of, I relate to a lot more.
Jim Groom's nature.
That's right.
I'll show a quick one. And Jim, you should have this index page. Can you see that? I threw it in Twitter too, so that way you can just click on the links and it'll save you from having to search.
Yeah, you got it. Perfect. I got it. So I'm going to go and do PowerPoint Ninja. We're watching
yeah.
it now.
Yeah, you want to be about 18 seconds in.
Okay. That one is hard to turn off. I don't want to turn that one off. That's awesome. Okay, what's going on?
That's one of those beautiful ones to me because like I had lots of middle school kids who did that. They would spend hours and hours single frame animating that stuff in PowerPoint, you know? And they'd have like 500 slides in a deck. They'd set them all, change, you know, automatically every, you know, 0.1 seconds. And then rip through this thing and create those sort of animations.
Yeah, that is remarkable. I have actually never seen anyone do that. That would make a more interesting presentation than how we use them. Right?
It's a different idea, and that's the reason I like it, is it's taken some, you know, and it's just like, you know, I think we linked at one point in the class to the Excel animations. you know, that same idea. Can you take these things that are meant for something totally different and use them to create stories, to make art, to do something just like, you know, you repurpose them for your own needs and wants. And I think that's really kind of a fun possibility.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. Sequence of lines?
Yeah, you can do sequence of lines real quick. I think that was just kind of crazy. But as you watch it, you know, is it a story? Does it even matter? Should it be a video? I think, you know, all those questions kind of come up.
Okay, that's it.
And it might be worth hearing, you know, what this project is they created an online drawing tool where each person could only see the last line drawn, and they had 500 people trying to draw a straight line, trying to trace the line before them. And what you see is kind of the copy errors over time of 500 people.
So that's what the straight line becomes?
Yeah.
That's like telephone graphically framed.
Exactly. So it's a graphical version of telephone played out over a computer through Amazon's Mechanical Turk. So it can be a little goose to trace that line.
Wild.
So is it a story? Like, what is that?
Yeah. What is it? Is it a psychological experiment? Right? I mean, that's what telephone often was, but also telephone was a narrative and a frame on how narrative goes wrong. Right? Oftentimes. Yeah.
It looks like it's a duck.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, this brings us into question. Earlier on this semester, I think, did I guys show you the Walmart video where you started to see how Walmart started in the 60s and how it exploded, that visualization of Walmart like a cancer all over North America? Well, it's interesting how many of the videos that you're framing for us between the bug ones and this the sequence of lines is a visualization narrative in some ways, right? I mean, it's really kind of crossing over the whole idea of the new data visualization or the ability for video to visualize something in a way we couldn't before.
Exactly. So it's telling a story through data, I think, you know, in terms of like saying, you know, how inaccurate our representations are, especially as they get copied out. And I think it's about more than just the line in the end. You know, that is, it's whether you want to set it in context. Otherwise, it's just a series of poorly drawn lines. I think it's just kind of a weird place. And the fact that we can make these sort of things and tools that create this sort of video is really kind of awesome in a lot of ways.
Well, I like the way where it also is, I mean, the traditional idea of digital storytelling and also of storytelling with video is the narrative that we understand and kind of used to. What's interesting is you're showing us a whole series of narratives that oftentimes we wouldn't consider in terms of video, but they actually highlight the power of video to capture. Eric?
I would say that it's almost more of a story than the one with the bugs, just because it's really each line is just a different human character that you can kind of, for that moment where their line shows up, you can put yourself in their position and see what they were dealing with and how they went with it and how people respond to it.
Yeah. Who's that one character who set it all off? Or if there is a way you could trace it. Did you hear that?
I heard part of it.
No, it was really well said. Eric noted that possibly more than any of the others, that was more of a story because each line represented in some way a character. And for that moment, that character embodied that part of the story. Is that fair to your comment? And I actually like that. as this kind of embodiment within the line of a trace. You know, and it's also interesting, picking up on what Eric says, this idea, it's constantly talked about in literature, this idea of the trace, right? The trace of what happened through video, like the capturing of a trace. You see that in the brackish water. You see that the trace of the bug, right, where the bug left off, and then the trace of the person as they went through that. And it also goes back to Akko's point about a lot of this conceptual stuff moving into both narrative, but then really blurring the lines between narrative and art, which is kind of where I think one should be.
Yeah, most of my stuff's blurry. I'm not sure where it sits, so I think it's kind of fun that way.
How about Cobain?
Yeah, we'll run through that one real quick. You really want to just get, you know, play a little bit of it and then knock it to about half, three quarters. You know, it's essentially the capturing of somebody drawing Kurt Cobain in photo sheets.
Yeah. I haven't seen that one before. Has anyone seen that one before? That drawing of Cobain? Where do you find this stuff?
It's in, like, you know, probably 50, 60 pages of Delicious Links that are just tagged like video. So it's just, you know, over time I try to, you know, just tag things that I think might be cool someday. To me, the interesting question about this one is, I'm not sure, and I'll put the question to you, like, what's more of a work of art, like the process or the final product? So if you were presented with the end product as a JPEG or whatever, or this video, where do you find more worth and why?
Well, yeah, Kelsey.
I would say the video, because really appreciate the work that they put into it, and that tells a story of how they went about it. But just looking at the final product, I don't think I'd be impressed.
Yeah, and to repeat what Kelsey had said, I mean, much more the video than the actual final product, because you probably, you know, you wouldn't be so impressed. But the actual watching the process, watching how someone does it, is far more impressive. And I'll add to that, I don't know if anyone else, also the music. Like the different Kurt Cobain music, you know, the whole Nirvana music framed in a different tune. And then the actual knowing that this is actually one of those, like, you know, that Edward Hopper, what's that famous Edward Hopper? Like where everyone now, like James Dean and Jimi Hendrix, they're all at the bar.
Nighthawks.
Right? What is it called?
Nighthawks,
right? And like you're all the famous icons who died. Well, this drawing is kind of like that iconic drawing of Cobain, that you know that, you know, the music playing behind someone representing this figure that's, you know, no longer a human being, but an icon of the 90s and of grunge and of, you know, some sort of, you know, train wreck of a lifestyle. I mean, it's interesting how the process is captured right there, too. You know, if you just saw the thing, it would be worth $10 on a New York City street. But seeing the process and the effect, you kind of, to me, it's a narrative of how these icons get made, right? How they get represented. I don't know.
I think
there's a certain degree of intimacy, I think, in seeing how someone makes something like that. You're seeing the process, and it just gives you an insight that you don't have when it's just presented as a commodity that's already done and finished, and you don't get to see the kind of the work that goes into it. It's to me, that is what makes it kind of a really powerful video.
And also, like, when he or she does the kind of water in the eye or the cleft in the chin, I mean, it's moving to see, like, at what point his visage becomes that much more alive and animated. I mean, it's trippy.
So that series was just kind of to push the bounds of, you know, of what y'all think about when you think of video and storytelling. I was just trying to show some kind of non-standard examples so that, you know, when you go to make your videos, you're not bound as tightly by what video can often mean, which is taking a video camera and filming something that happens in real life and then editing it. So hopefully that broke down at least a few barriers and opened up some possibilities. There's just hundreds more. I kept having to pare things down. Because oddly enough, I originally had that airplane visualization in there. I decided to drop it. So it's kind of fortuitous that it went. I didn't end up showing it anyway.
It was meant to be.
So the next one are two really, really simple videos. So if we can watch a little bit of Don't Tase Me, Bro, and then just follow it up with the Shark Tank.
Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me! I can't do it over! Ow! 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 Ow!
Okay, wow, thanks.
Yeah, kind of intense, right?
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Don't tase me, bro. The screaming, the cops huddled around so you can't actually see the tasing. I love that effect. And
so it's really going to contrast with what you see next.
Okay. Shark Tank?
Yeah.
I'm getting scared already.
No, it's so the opposite.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good.
All right. So we have two kind of both are pretty powerful in their own way. So what is it that makes them good?
What you have under the heading. They're dead simple. The Don't Tase Me Bro is hilarious because it's physical comedy of a very violent nature, which people tend to find funny. And then Shark Tank works because it's basically a screensaver. And so it's just what you wrote. They're dead simple and appeal to humanity.
Did you hear all that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, David.
Not just the simplicity you should put up, but there's the contrast. And Don't Tase Me, Bro. There's the hilarious, no, don't tase me, bro. And there's the cops looking all grim. It's kind of a little bit scary, but kind of really funny at the same time. And then the sharks, there's these sharks, and they're all white and beautiful, and then there's the people standing there all dark. There's just this contrast between them.
Yeah. And I don't know if you heard that, but I mean, really the contrast between the screaming of "Don't tase me, bro!" and also the cops who kind of look, you know, serious, but also in some ways holding down. And then with the Shark Tank one, you have the beauty of the sharks swimming by, and then the blackness of the people down below, just their shadows. And that one dude who's like waving at the camera and doing the peace sign. I mean, it really is magical in some ways to see people as silhouettes like that versus these beasts who like really kind of are far above them in grace and elegance, and you got this doofus down there like, hey, peace, you know? It makes the human race look pretty weak.
Yeah, neither one of them portray humans all that highly.
Yeah, it's true. It's a theme. No, yeah.
And I think it's also interesting to look at the quality differences between the two, because if the Shark Tank was filmed, you know, kind of with poor quality, I don't know if it would be as powerful.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes I think the quality of what you're able to capture matters a lot more than others. So, you know, no matter how grainy Don't Tase Me, Bro was, it still would have worked.
Yeah. No, that's a good... I like that. And I also, I mean, the fact is Don't Tase Me, Bro, how is that... I mean, how do we know, having seen that, how do we know that's comedy? It's one of the things that is funny. Like, I think we know that's comedy because we've seen it. It's been a meme. But when you first see it, how do you know it's comedy? It's one of the things that fascinates me about that video. And because it could seem horrific.
Especially coming into it suddenly like that with no kind of, like, part of what made that funny, I think, was the warm-up to it and how kind of absurd it was.
Yep.
And then it ended with that. But to jump right into it kind of gives it a very different feel.
Ah, absolutely. I mean, to take it completely out of context, you would be like, wow, what's going on here? You know, it almost becomes horror. Yeah.
I've never seen it before, so when I was watching that, I was kind of freaking out. Power, and that is awful.
Yeah, that's not something to laugh at. And it's funny how people like laugh like that's a funny, and you like you see the cop's face, but you probably didn't see any of that in the cop's face.
So when he was like, "Oh, it's hilarious," I was like, "Oh."
Exactly.
I don't really
it's
think
like.
So. But also, it kind of like provided my response to what makes the videos good was the power element in both of them. Like the sharks are supposed to be like really powerful beings, and they're not really doing anything; they're just peaceful, and everyone's like, "Wow, magnificent, peaceful," and then.
Yeah, and Audrey in the back, I don't know if you heard that. I mean, the elements of power made the films good for her. I mean, between the elegant beauty, beautiful sharks that were powerful and sailing above versus the cops who were holding down and tasing as a form of power, these two very different kind of compositions of power, even expressions of power, which I like. I mean, that's a nice reading. Make sense?
Yeah.
So don't tase me, bro.
And I have the lighter version here in the remix category.
Good. Let's go through that. Because it's now maybe Audrey won't be so like, what the hell are these
it'll
people
help,
doing?
Yeah, make her think that people are less sick.
Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me! Don't tase me, bro! Don't tase me! Don't tase me, bro!
Man, remix culture is the best thing to ever happen. Okay.
That is a true mashup. You know, you take just two things that you could not imagine being together, and then you make it work. And, like, I mean, it's just crazy that that's a possibility even. And so what I tried to do here was to kind of break down a couple different ways you could remix things. That was kind of the mashup idea. This next one is the idea of Scary Mary. I don't know if a lot of y'all have seen it, maybe we can skip it and go on.
Who's seen Scary Mary? Okay, only three or four people, so we're definitely watching it.
All right, let's check it out.
Thank you. All right. Awesome.
But yeah, I think that's a really wild. When you've seen, you know, The Shining as a comedy, you know, a romantic comedy, and they remix, or maybe you haven't, but it's out there. You know, they remix a bunch of things so they take the actual footage and they use it to create, like, the exact opposite. To me, it's crazy how easily that can be done, and that's by changing the music and making a few cuts. Like, I just think that's a really cool possibility in so many ways.
Yeah, and that's a huge example for the section that's coming with mashup and remix. I mean, that and the other one you're talking about, The Shining. Has anyone seen Shining as a romantic comedy? So we'll show that on Thursday. But that's a brilliant example, too. Yeah, so that's a good frame for what's to come.
And I don't want to tread too hard on the remix stuff, so we could skip down to the Odd Kid lip sync if you'd like.
The Odd Kid lip sync? Okay.
Yeah. And this. Look at the number of views on that thing.
I can't see how many. We have it full screen.
$27 million.
What's going on there?
So this guy, Beaner Pee-Pee, he just does lip sync after lip sync. He's just an odd-looking kid, you know, and that's what he does. You just got to imagine how much money he's making, though.
Now, did 50 Cent really come? I mean, that's not like that he really came and did a duet with him?
As far as I know, it's real. I don't see how it would take, like, some serious, serious money to fake that.
Yeah, that's right.
But part of what makes it cool to me is the kid didn't even clean up his room.
That's right. It's like, Mom, 50 Cent's coming over.
Yeah, he was like, I'll pick up my dirty clothes. No, he didn't. I mean, I just think, like, that is so cool that this kid who's just, you know, who could very easily become, you know, be some oddball who's picked on and kind of bullied, has taken this by the horns, I guess, and just run with it and create it, you know, both something that is a lot of fun and interesting for him, it looks like, and that, through the ads and things, probably is making him a pretty good money.
That's awesome. I've never seen this kid before. Beaner Kiki?
Yeah, I hadn't either until, I don't know, at some point I came across it. But he does tons of stuff, and you look at him, a lot of them have, you know, pretty serious views, you know, a couple hundred thousand here and there.
That's insane.
But he was able to get, like, so much attention and publicity that 50 Cent came to him. Like, when else in the world was that possible? By doing essentially not particularly good lip syncing.
And 50 Cent came to him for the video, for the promotion.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And I don't know if it's a story or not. In a way, I think 50 Cent showing up in the video makes it all sorts of story. You know, it's not just a video, and it's not really about the song. It's about, like, this kid and his ability to, like, have done this. I think that's just, like, so amazingly crazy. And to me, it shows the power of video and how popular this is, and just, like, you know, just the possibilities there are just really crazy.
I mean, and that's a good point. And what you touch on actually is something, I mean, we've kind of not really talked about. We're really just coming into video now, but I mean, one of my big pet peeves, and one of the things that I think is remarkable about video, is video in some ways, the emergence of YouTube in 2005, embed code, the rise of millions of views of these kind of video YouTube kind of icons that emerged over the last 5 years, it's almost like we take for granted. But in it has emerged a completely different online culture of dominated by video. And what's interesting to me in higher ed, and schools in particular, is we really spend little, if no time, dealing with it, thinking about it, critiquing it, imagining it. I mean, it's like, oh yeah, then there's this thing, video, that 400 million people are watching Justin Bieber do, right? How do you deal with that? I mean, I just think it's like a gaping hole in our cultural education in some ways. Yes, Nora.
I don't think that's true. I think that maybe you've worked at smaller schools, and so there isn't room for that. But my sister goes to GMU, and she had to re-edit a movie trailer, and she used James Bond Goldfinger and made it into a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And I think there are larger schools where they study this kind of stuff. It's just not necessarily Mary Washington.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm not even talking about there's media study classes at GMU. Sure. I'm saying we still are dominated across disciplines at most institutions of higher ed with the idea of the paper as the means to communicate.
Because that's how academic proceedings go. You don't publish a video, you publish a paper and you become a doctor.
Well, I mean, does that have to be?
Well, yes, because it's tradition and academia is one place that takes absolute... Copyright law and academia move slightly faster than Neptune.
Yeah. Audrey.
Never mind.
I mean, but the point is because your sister or your friend did it at GMU for a class, doesn't mean we're starting to see the idea of this is something we need to understand the grammar of, right? Not everyone who goes to college or goes to university is going to be a scholar.
But there isn't necessarily a grammar. It's too new. It's only been around for 6 years.
Video has been around for, video's been around for 20 or 30 years. Film, which the grammar is immersed in, has been around for almost 100 years.
Yes, but this specific kind of video has only been around for about 6 years. There's not a grammar yet. It's not old enough to have a grammar.
I would say there is. I say we're starting to see an emergence of a grammar that's based in a tradition that we have no real understanding of at the university because we really don't frame any kind of importance around the history of cinema.
Yes, we do.
The history of video.
Yes, we do.
How come we, okay, maybe not in general, but how come we don't have any film classes besides like film as history?
We're a small school.
I would say, compared to other disciplines, how many there are. I would say it's, compared to how big a media film was in the 20th century, we have very little kind of dedicated departments to it.
Well, I think the difference may be that film has always been treated as entertainment and light stuff and not dealing with the kind of heavy and weighty academic matters that should be dealt with in an institution. Whether that's the case or not will be pretty easily debatable. And in terms of, I think, the grammar, I would say if you're having conversations with it, a grammar exists. Whether or not we understand it, I would say it's more of a matter of focus than its newness or its existence.
Yeah. That's the point there. Audrey, I didn't want to cut you off.
We
have another question. Sorry to waylay you at that time. But Nora's good. She likes to argue. I like that.
I was going to say, don't you think there's value, though, in not having academia pertaining to film? And the idea of not having a class kind of makes it more creative. Like, you can go at it whenever you want to, wherever you want to, do whatever you want with it.
Yep.
And then if you put it into the context of academia, you might be forced to linearize it and make it into something that it really can't be, and then it would become something entirely different, something that people dread.
I think that's... Did you hear that?
Let me ask you, then what do you think of this course that you've taken now? Is it going to make you better storytellers or worse?
Yeah.
Just for me
That's
personally.
Fair.
I think that for some people I'm sure that it'll be great, but I kind of like the idea of finding things on my own and discovering it and then playing around with it for the fun of playing around with it, and it's just my own personal hang up about having things forced on me. That's less fun.
Yeah.
I don't think you grow so much as a storyteller so much as you're offered more options in your media for storytelling.
Yeah.
Your style doesn't necessarily change.
Also the possibility of limitations to do a certain thing within a certain amount of time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's also that construct, whether it works for everyone or not is another question, but that construct, when used well, could be helpful. But I agree with you. I don't know if it's necessarily the best to do it in academia. Although I do think there's a space for thinking about the grammar of film and the history of film more than we do, even if just at Mary Washington, for various reasons.
Yeah, I think that if I were like in the open class, in the Einstein class, so I could like do this whenever I wanted, I could love it like, a lot.
Yeah.
If I weren't getting a grade.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing about the whole grade thing. Yeah. Okay.
But they're usually forced to grade it.
Well, I mean, the whole credit thing puts you in, but I mean, I don't know, has the grading situation, I mean, the grading situation works according to what you do, not so much an evaluation. So it's a matter of doing the work, right? Yeah, Sarah.
Oh, well, you could also do this class pass fail if you didn't want to get graded.
Absolutely.
Or you could put in less time and effort.
Yeah. Okay, Tom.
All right. We'll skip your sweet one. That's you, Jim Groom Bears et al. So
yeah.
Those of you who are Jim Groom fans may want to watch him rid himself of all his facial and head hair in that video. But it's an imitation of what movie was it, Jim?
It was the Royal Tenenbaums.
So that idea of sweeting things, you know, making kind of versions, kind of hackneyed, for lack of a better term, kind of your own versions of different movies is kind of fun. I think, I can skip the takes for now because I don't run out of time, but that first one by Nile, Let the Bee Build, is a, you know, new lyrics over one of Lil Wayne's song, but the whole video is shot in one take. And it's really crazy to watch something like that because you often don't see the one take, kind of long take videos. But let's take a quick look at the sour one. Will you load that one, Jim?
Yep. Crazy.
And this was done all by fans using only webcams.
そっといつたまにかかりにうつる心は君の目に抜けた君胸に
That's another one that's hard to turn off, though, once you start watching it. I mean, it's completely...
Yeah, it's really wild what they do throughout the whole video. And it's just crazy to me that all these people did this in isolation, you know, using the cheapest camera probably available, and then it was assembled into something like that on the back end. You know, I just think that that's, like, such a cool... You know, once you see it, you're like, oh, you know, it just opens up all sorts of possibilities.
I mean, yeah, it makes you start thinking about why have I never thought to do that? Like split the screen for.
I know I'm about out of time here.
Tom,
I think
you got
the, 15
minutes. Tom, you got 15 minutes. Plenty of time.
15
minutes. Plenty of time.
All right. Check out the live. Y'all have heard Chat Roulette, right?
Yeah.
Roulette, whatever it's called. Watch what this guy does, you know, because you normally you hear it along the you know, lines of, like, pornography and sickos and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's how I frame it.
Yep.
Inside, we've come to cheer you up. Don't be sad. Don't be sad. 2,000 people here in Charlotte are here to cheer you up. Hello, Mr. Shirtless Man. How are you doing today? Is it hot in there? There's a note on a white piece of paper. What does it say? Is there really a person in there?
So how crazy is that? I mean, think about it. He's doing a live concert with live streaming video variables. You know, like, I mean, how bizarre is that possibility? You know, I mean, to me, that's what makes the digital storytelling stuff and the interaction of video and what could be the synchronicity of it, you know, really exciting and fun, is that you can just do totally bizarre things that no one has ever done before because of what this technology is enabling.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole idea that some people figure that out and have fun with it, right? Like the dude, the first dude who's waving and you hear the crowd go crazy. I mean, when you watch that video all the way through, I love the people who pick up on that and how quick they do. It's remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy playing that game when he starts marking off all the tape for people to turn their heads, I thought that was like the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, and that's Ben Folds, isn't that? Is that doing the tribute to Burton? That's right. I knew you'd say something like that. Okay. What next? Tarp?
All right, let's do a quick shot of tarp surfing, because I think that's another one where it's about this idea. Like, the video is the way you convey this idea, and it allows you to transmit it to all these other people.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, that is awesome.
So it doesn't have to be like expensive stuff or special effects. You can have an amazing amount of fun and do some really creative things with like a blue plastic tarp. You know, I just think that sort of thing is so cool. The possibilities, you know, of a blue tarp. You know, who would have thought? And then the next one, where would I wish to wake up tomorrow? I think, to me, is the video equivalent of the Strangers Project. So I think it's just such a cool idea. And I tried to do something like it in the past, but, you know, I kind of petered out. Take a look at that when you do.
Yeah, we're watching it right now. Is this like your Strangers photo project?
Yeah, what they do is they set up a thing and they just ask everyone in this thing the same question.
And this is a
where would you wish to wake up to tomorrow?
I'm not required to answer this question, right?
This is
scaring
me.
Yeah.
We're nervous. Well, we're from Brooklyn. My name's Daniel. This is Haiti.
Say hi. Hi.
I'm
ready for the question.
All right.
Where would I wish to wake up tomorrow?
Where would I wish to wake up tomorrow?
That's a question, sharp and sweet.
In my bed. What's better than that? Please, I know. Say.
Hopefully in my bed. My next one on Apple. When you wake up at a place and it's weird.
Alaska.
I'm a big sportsman, and that would get me into my dream world.
On the beach in Kenya, where it's warm and the sky is blue and the water is blue and I can see everything. I can go swimming.
Wow. Paris.
It's a romantic place to be. To me, I think it is. And that's my dream. It's my dream to be in Paris.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
And a lot of that, you know, I mean, it's cool what people say and capturing it, but then when you're creating the story, it really is the power to make it cohesive and to tell kind of the tale. That's in the power is in your hands, the way you edit it and the way you cut these things together. You're setting the context for each individual one by the one that comes before it and after it. So that's where the storytelling comes in. The raw stuff is beautiful, but the person who can put it together in a way that kind of makes it more than the sum of the parts, you know, that's the cool stuff to me. And kind of one of the interesting possibilities, you know, it would be a really cool thing to go and do that.
Well, in the
go ahead.
In the way that, you know, he captures them preparing to get on camera and their nervousness and that, I mean, that's a great effect. Some of that stuff that would automatically be left out by many with the idea of production. And just the way that one woman who's talking about Kenya and the beach eats up the camera. Like, you see her getting into it. And, like, now she's, like, ready. It's like there's this real intimate space there with the lens. It's amazing.
All right. So I'll skip the EdTech Survivalist for now, despite the fact that it kind of breaks my heart to do it. But if any of y'all want to see Jim Groom and myself at times acting fairly foolish,
we're good.
That's the place to go.
We're good. Star Wars kid?
Well, you know, I just want to mention that there is, you know, some of the bad stuff about video and in this kind of online instant celebrity. The Star Wars kid, you've probably seen, overweight guy, you know, pretending he has a lightsaber. And it turns out, like, that was put up by some other kids at the school in an attempt kind of to embarrass him. And it's, you know, had millions and millions of views, and it, things haven't gone all that well for him, at least at one part. And, you know, it's kind of really sad that that sort of thing can happen, you know, without your consent. Now, the Rebecca Black one is something that's going on right now. Have any of y'all seen that video?
Yeah, we had a class about it.
Oh, okay. So we skipped that.
We talked about it. What is your take on that? I'm really interested. What's your take on the Rebecca Black thing?
You know, I think it depends on how much money she's making and whether it, you know, freaks her out and causes her to, you know, have to withdraw from society, which is kind of what happened to the Star Wars. You know, if she can get her piece out of this, then so be it, and it doesn't do her any damage, then it's all the better. You know, I think to some extent she did it and put it up there, so I feel the responsibility is a lot more on her than it is on the Star Wars kid.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, the idea was, I mean, as we talked about and Andrew brought up last time we talked about this, that this was a kind of vanity publishing house, production house,
right,
that put this out, and her parents paid X amount of thousands of dollars to do it. So it's interesting that this is part of a kind of, you know, I was talking about the industry behind it and how that industry behind it suggests a new kind of model of just laying bare how kind of cheap our culture is, or at least that was my argument.
Well, the fact that you would want to pay somebody to produce what is essentially a travesty, you know, in and of itself is kind of, you know, why wouldn't you make your own travesty? And just briefly, because, you know, I've managed to, my poor wife has four sick kids downstairs, but I'll hit the tools real quick, and then, you know, I'll stop belaboring the point here. I linked to a couple tools just because I think right now it's a really cool place for video. All right, so you have everything from that GoPro HD Hero, for about $170. It's waterproof, shockproof, and it's made to, like, mount on things. That video links to a really cool skimboarding video where they've attached the camera to the end of a broomstick, and so you get some really crazy crazy angles, and they're dropping it in the water, and it's just awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you've got the iPhone. There's a video shot and edited entirely on an iPhone. So the possibilities in terms of cheap, easy production are just everywhere at this point. You know, you have to put a camera and all that as well. You got all your phone cameras in addition to the iPhone. The iPhone's kind of cool in that you can edit the video on the phone as well. And that's just, it's just such a weird possibility now. The other thing that's really cool is for the high quality stuff, the DSLRs, a lot of them are now able to shoot video, like a 5D Mark II and the Canon 70, you know, a number of other ones. They can do the kind of video you could only do before with cameras that cost, you know, just extraordinary amounts of money.
Well, I'm in need. Yes, it's a
we're looking at that one with the DSLR.
Oh, she's
yeah. Just the effects he can achieve with that.
Jesus. Yeah, that's insane. How much is that camera?
The 5D is about $3,000, which sounds like a lot. And it is a lot, but compared to what it was, you know, that's nothing. You know, you're talking 50, 60, you know, all the way up to a couple $100,000 for a camera that would do similar things, the sort of depth of field effects. And you can get a camera that would do the video probably for around, you know, $800 to $1,000 now. And, you know, then just investing and, you know, learning how to use it. And I mean, it's just amazing that that's there and it can be in the hands of, you know, a consumer fairly reliably. The Red Rock thing pimped it out totally so you can do all the crazy stuff you would want to do. It's just kind of like an extension kit. It's just kind of wild to see them aftermarket that's kind of gone into this. I forget what TV show they filmed entirely on 5D Mark IIs, but that's been done. You know, it's just one of those crazy moments of possibility that's only happened in about the last year, 2 years, that this has been possible at all to do that sort of thing. So it's worth checking out and thinking about, because you can rent these cameras. You could rent one of those 5D Mark IIs for about $100, you know, $150, $200 for a week, and then get the lenses and produce your movie and have it be on par with the things you see being done by these really expensive companies. So, you know, I think that is pretty wild.
All right, abbreviate the proof needed for us, and then we'll let you go get back to your kids.
I just said, you know, it's kind of fun because video sometimes just gives you the proof needed that things exist, right? Like,
yeah.
Without the video, the fact that people go noodling and catch catfish, giant catfish.
Have you heard of noodling?
What's that?
Tom introduced me to noodling.
Between 2020.
You know what this guy is doing?
Yeah. Okay. Now, who's that?
This is awesome. Right
there, man.
Okay, we're watching it, Tom. The noodling.
My favorite
sport of the South.
Man, that's a good fish, man.
Yeah,
that's
right. It's awesome. So let's review. What did we learn tonight? What is noodling? What? You cut your catfish with your bare hands, and that one's like 70, 80 pounds. It's awesome. The South is a center. House. It's a powerhouse of culture, and that is proof. Proof needed. All right. Tommy.
So, you know, the rest of it's just kind of silly. The side hug thing is just the fact that there's a song called Give Me That Christian Side Hug, and it's about not hugging face to face.
Can we wait, know. Hold on. Give us a second. What the hell is this? So this is like the Christian subculture.
It's Christian gangster rap about not hugging face to face because it's too provocative.
That's awesome. Okay. Good.
If you didn't have video of that, you would never believe that actually existed.
Well, Tom, man, you were awesome. That was a great tour de force through those videos. Thank you very much. You know what? You plan it a lot because this is the next week and a half is mash up and thinking about what is possible with video. So it couldn't have come at a better time. Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate it.
All right. You guys have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Good. So that was a cool tour de force. I mean, I don't know where this guy finds what he finds on the web, but he is like, I follow him on Twitter, T. Woodwork. I mean, he's got an amazing sensibility about what is emergent as culture on the web right now. And what I like about Tom is, for me, he takes a fresh look at all this stuff, right? And he doesn't come to it with, I think, what Nora and Audrey were arguing to some degree. Some of what I argue should be part of the institution is thinking about how this stuff is, building a tradition, framing it, at least at UMW. But he comes at it with the argument that Audrey's saying, and you're saying too, completely fresh. Look what's happening out on the web and how does it inform about how we talk about stories and do it. And a remarkable thing with video right now is you can